Hi, welcome to For the Girls Podcast. This is Nick Westrate.
This is Jason Black, and we're bringing you some oldies but goodies to, I guess, put back on the main.
That's right. We're coming back. You know, we've mainly migrated over to Patreon, where you can find us at patreon.com/forthegirlspodcast. For $3 a month, you can listen to all of our back episodes. But we are putting some of our favorites back here on the main so you can remember why you loved us to begin with. And what series are we putting up, Jay?
We're putting up the Diva You Should Know series. So that's where we just bring up a diva that we feel like is undervalued in our opinion that we want to shine more light to and get more attention for.
Yeah, so on this series, you'll hear about divas like Sister Rosetta Tharpe, Nancy Wilson, Judy Sill, Phoebe Snow, and others. Some of the banter will be dated, maybe even for the pandemic. Content about the diva will be really dated because all of these are older divas who you probably haven't heard of, or if you have heard of, you don't know enough about them. So it's a herstory lesson.
Yeah. We're just here to be your educators into these amazing women's careers. And I don't know, it's like a little lily pad. We want you to step on the lily pad and jump into the water of some of these people that we just find fascinating and amazing and super talented.
Yeah, so these are really fun deep dives. And if you want more of our other content, like Bet episodes or My Favorite Murder, She Wrote, or The House of Roberts, come and find us over on the Patreon. $3 a month helps us support this podcast and helps preserve diva history forever.
So, okay, we love you. Love you, Battle Angels.
We love you. See Enjoy ya. This episode. Bye.
Mwah. Bye.
I know, but this is different, though.
Should have been a great opening, right? I mean, we're going to basically just do Dream Lane as casting all day.
I think we could do Dream Casting for her, though. That's always fun. Like, boop, 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 boop. Hi.
Hi, good morning. This is For the Girls Podcast.
Yes, and this is your host, Jason Black.
And this is your hostess, Nick Westrate.
And we are doing a podcast because
as a human
being in this world, you are contracted to do at least one podcast.
At least one podcast. You get more points if you do more than one.
A lot of people do more than one.
Yeah, a lot of people do multiple podcasts.
Yeah, they're like, we're just going to put all the sticks in the fire and see what burns.
Uh-huh. Jason has another podcast, which is conspiracy theories about what?
Lilith Fair
conspiracy theories.
I also have a website. No, I don't. Don't look for this because that would be devastating to me if I'm like, where is this is the one thing I wanted.
That episode hasn't happened yet.
No.
In the Matrix.
No.
In a future episode, just stay tuned, Battle Angels, because Jason's going to announce his Lilith Fair conspiracy theory podcast, which is going to get all the girls at Reddit jumping. But this podcast is not that podcast. No. What is this podcast
about?
Well,
this is our podcast. This is our only podcast. We only have one stick in the fire.
It's called For the Girls.
And it's a million-dollar podcast where we talk to stands about divas, and then we just gab with ourselves about any old thing.
We talk
any old
about,
woman.
We're exploring the LGBTQ community's relationship to iconic female performers and why it is that, you know, we've been obsessed with Judy and Barbara and Tina and Aretha and Bette and all of these iconic women, and why that cliche exists. And why that love endures, and why new generations of fans become obsessed with Ariana and Nicki and Cardi B, you know, and Taylor.
Yeah, I would say that there's the aspect of why, but then there's the other aspect that I always think about of Nick and I have always just had such a passion and relationship to female performers, and this world's such shit that we thought, well, what better thing to do than just to share that love and
focus on
celebrate.
Focusing on what we love this year instead of what gives us anxiety or what makes us angry. We've just been spending this whole year of 2019 talking about who we love, why we love them, why they inspire us. Women, no men, because men don't inspire us ever, except in the bedroom.
And God.
And who is also a woman.
And a man.
And a man. Great. Wow, that was a really iconic intro.
Yeah. Really? It was funny. The most important thing is it was funny and catchy.
It was really funny and catchy.
That's what we're
those are our goals. So if you've been listening to us for a while now, you know that sometimes we'll do these episodes called Diva You Should Know.
Yeah, we've done two. We did kind of two.
Right.
This is we did Audra McDonald's way back. We talked about her album Way Back to Paradise.
Right. And Audra is a diva we all know, but some people aren't as familiar with.
Right.
And some people are as familiar with that record. And then we did Dar Williams, who again, you know, all of our coffee house queens are aware of. All of our Lilith Fair conspiracy theorists are aware of Dar Williams. But maybe not everyone is. And we celebrated her.
And we celebrated her. But we kind of did it more through talking about how their music inspired us. And we didn't quite do it so much so autobiographical. Which kids,
we're bringing doing today.
Special episode. Yeah, this is kind of our... I think we talk about it a lot, but we haven't quite... It's our intimate portraits.
It's our behind the music.
Behind the music. Intimate Portraits was something on a Lifetime, the channel for women. In
Lifetime Television for women.
Yes.
And gays.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, I got all my life... I got all my life lifetimed on Lifetime.
Man.
And they would do these kind of like 42-minute long bios on all types of fabulous women.
And they had a great intro music. I think we talked about this last week with Bea Arthur about Intimate Portraits. If you haven't listened to that episode, go back and download that and listen to it because it's great. But yeah, we are doing our own Intimate Portrait this week of...
Phoebe Snow.
Everyone scratching your heads. Whenever I bring up Phoebe Snow with people, everyone's like...
It kind of zooms over.
It zooms right over. I feel like it's someone that people pretend like they know who that is.
I think they know
really
the
don't.
Name. Mm-hmm. The name's kind of... And I think actually a lot of people know what she looks like, which is funny because the first thing that you should know is Phoebe Snow is not black, which right. I found out actually pretty recently. And also...
Why did it take you so long to figure that out?
Well, everyone thought she was black.
Yeah.
A lot of people really thought she was black to the point where she got her... she did the DNA test because like so many people were convinced, even though she was like, my parents were like whiter than my last name, Snow. she's actually a Jewish woman. And so she kind of had like a tight kind of,
she had very curly hair,
perm, yeah. And she sang kind of jazz and blues and R&B.
And her voice is so soaring and she has this incredible vocal ability that people were like, oh, she must be African American.
Right. So that was like one of the first things that I thought. I thought about her. Also, I want to say this is a diva that we're really excited about because we really didn't know much about her.
No, but when we started this podcast, when we first started thinking about Diva You Should Know episodes, Phoebe Snow was one of the first. Yep. Like, I kind of discovered her last summer when we were first gestating this podcast. I discovered her before that, but I did my deep dive last summer when I was thinking about this idea of like episodes that would be Diva You Should Know, and Phoebe Snow has always been the ultimate of that. So since this is kind of our first real... autobiographical Diva You Should Know episode, I'm really glad we're doing it about Phoebe Snow.
And it's really cool, and it was really cool for us because we really got to geek out and do the research. And it's really kind of the thing that Nick and I love to do is like kind of find information and bring it to each other and share it. So it's kind of like this podcast is that, and we got to kind of be involved in that, and now we're bringing it to you.
So we're going to dive into the Intimate Portrait of Phoebe Snow. And before we start, I should say that this episode couldn't come to you without the journalistic efforts of Robert Palmer at Rolling Stone, Greg Hernandez for the Daily News, who has a blog or used to called Out in Hollywood blog, the New York Times obituary section, the Independent obituary section, David Levin's show on YouTube, Pop Goes the Culture, and of course, our deepest and longest standing girlfriend, Wikipedia.
Donate to them.
Yeah, give Wikipedia a dollar, you guys.
Give them five.
Give them $5. You look at Wikipedia every day. Come on, give them $5.
We would literally be walking around in the streets getting hit by cars if we didn't have Wikipedia, I feel like.
I spent so much time on it, it's great. Okay, so this is the life of Phoebe Snow.
And so we begin.
Wind chimes. she was born in 1950, July 17th, 1950, in New York City. Her name was Phoebe Ann Laub. And then she was raised in Teaneck, New Jersey. And she was always, like all great New Jersey singers or performers, they always give a big shout out to their town in New Jersey, wherever they are. They're like, where are my people from Teaneck? She would always do that in every concert.
Oh, if even if she was in Alaska?
Uh-huh. She'd be like, anyone from Teaneck, New Jersey in the crowd? People from New Jersey are hilarious. And she was raised by two artists. Her mom was a Martha Graham dancer, and her dad was a former vaudevillian, a comedian and an actor, and then he had a business as an exterminator. So he like left his performing behind, became an exterminator. And she got her name, Phoebe Snow, because as a kid, she and her friends would play by these railroad tracks, and these the train would go by, and on the train at the time, I don't know why, there were these big tankers that said Phoebe Snow on them. And she always said, all of her friends would shout, your name is on the train. And they would stand there kind of awestruck that her name could be that big in front of them. But it was just her first name, Phoebe. But then later in life, she took the full name, Phoebe Snow.
I grew up with a girl whose name was Tiara. Because her mom once saw it in a commercial for perfume, and it was called Tiara, and there, she was like, that's going to be my daughter's name.
I saw this on TV.
I love when people just like see things in the real world and are like, that's a name I like.
I love it when people are that like free, because if I had to name a person or even like my cat, it took me like 6 months to name my cat. I'm so indecisive and insecure about where,
you know,
I can
me
come
I'm
from.
Always planning for
names. What are your daughter's names?
My daughter's names have never changed. Those, but my cat's names do always change. My daughter's names, if I have two daughters, you'll hear me say this all the time, Battle Angels. It's Crystal and Misty. And if I only have one daughter, it's Baby Jessica. And yes, her first name is Baby.
Baby Jessica Black, Crystal Black, Misty Black.
Yeah. And Misty's middle name is Wet Farts. But I think...
I think all of their middle names should be Robert, like yours. So it'd be Misty Robert Black, Crystal
That's
Robert Black.
Really gorgeous. But actually, bizarrely, I came up with this just recently. If I have a cat, I'm going to bizarrely name her after this girl that I knew barely in elementary school. And my new cat name is Stephanie LaPlace.
I remember Stephanie LaPlace. That's weird.
Isn't that really? But isn't that like such a sweet cat name? And you can be like Jason House Steph. I don't know. I just think like Stephanie, like, because you get really exacerbated with cats. And Nick's like, he said another wrong word, and I'm gonna keep that in, motherfucker. So Phoebe Snow. So Phoebe Snow, high school was not her thing, neither was college.
Yeah.
Which is so many of us artist types. We just don't do well in formal settings.
I did really well, but it's okay.
Shit!
Humble brag about how good I was at high
school. No. Some people, I did good.
I was a really good student.
I was good. I was not a good student, but I did like learning. I like learning.
That's a good differentiation.
But
yes, Phoebe had a really tough time.
Yeah, she was kind of, she's kind of picked on by girls. Phoebe has a really unique look to her, you know?
Yeah.
Like we said, kind of from the jump, like everyone, even like people that she was working with, assumed she was black. And she just kind of, she was a little bit thicker.
Mm-hmm. She had some pretty pronounced moles on her face, which I think are very beautiful.
Yeah. And she never really, what I find so iconic about our Phoebe is that like, she never really tried to glamorize.
Mm-mm.
Or like, you know, be gorgeous Joni Mitchell. Like she always wore these big glasses and like kept her hair in this kind of, I wouldn't say it's unflattering, but it wasn't like, she wasn't really stylizing herself.
No.
She was about the music.
And she was like it was just very hippie, like, I'm going to be me, I'm going to look how I look, this is me.
But this is kind of fabulous. Well, not fabulous because she was a binge drinker, but she was kind of getting into the drinking scene, but she came a stone cold drunk to her junior prom, which is, that's going to give you a lot to write about later on. Her date dumped her onto her parents' stoop, passed out.
Phoebe. junior prom is tough for everybody, but especially in Teaneck, New Jersey in the 1960s, I imagine.
Yeah, not a good look.
No.
Not a good look. Baby. But then she kind of tried to give college the, you know, the good try. She was only there for 2 years. And then she was like, okay, fuck this. Like, mama's got some magic. And so she moved to the city.
Moved to New York City. The city of dreams.
Yeah, and started doing the clubs. And Nick and I have been talking about this time period, y'all.
Yeah.
Iconic.
In the 1960s, in the late 60s, early 70s, yeah. Where there's just these clubs all around Greenwich Village, like the Bitter End, like the Village Vanguard, all these little places where young musicians would gig out, and they would just, there would be open mics, and you would flip from place to place. And there are people like Bette Midler doing this at the time. I mean, Bette had her longstanding gig at the Baths, but she would also perform at the Bitter End. Bruce Springsteen was doing this shit, and it was all in hopes of being discovered.
And that was a time where, like, producers would come to these, you know, be invited to these kind of talent nights.
Yeah.
So you would, you know, that was a thing back then. Like, your hope was that you would be picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd be given have a record career. Deal,
yeah. Or someone would let you record a demo or something like that. And she was writing all these songs. And she became really good friends with a guy named Charlie Parker, not the jazz great Charlie Parker, but a musician nonetheless. And they had this long and complicated kind of platonic relationship. I think it was romantic for Phoebe. It seemed a little unrequited from what I can understand. But she would say that he would become Harpo Marx for extended periods of time. He would, like, not speak, and he was very funny, and he would do these fun little bits, you know, like fun little physical comedy bits. And then he was just this kind of amazing character, you know, and he was the one who first encouraged her to go to these open mic nights at the Bitter End. And he would always tell her she was good enough and that she had to do this. He was really her best friend and inspiration. And he unfortunately died of a drug overdose in 1970. And then she wrote this song for him called Harpo's Blues, which was all about their love of each other and his kind of unique spirit.
I wish I was a willow and I could sway to the music in the wind. I wish I was a lover. I wouldn't need my costumes and pretend. Wish I was a mountain. I'd pass boldly through the clouds and never end. And I wish I was a soft refrain. When the lights were out, I'd play and be a friend. I strut and fret. My hour upon the stage. The hour is up. I have to run and hide my rage. I'm lost again. I think I'm really scared. I won't be back at all this time.
The other song she wrote about him was I Don't Want the Night to End.
There's a lot. What's
so they word? Obviously, I mean, there's this something about, and I Don't Want the Night to End is definitely about a night they spent together. So there must have been something sexual between them.
I was saying, telling Nick yesterday, I was like, yeah, and what mysterious lines are in that song in I Don't Want the Night to End. where she says what? She's standing on platforms underground. And I was like, and what does that even mean?
And I was like, Jason, it just means she's waiting for the subway.
Fucking subway. And I just walked out of the room. I'm not good at school, but I do like learning.
And that, you know, I love that lyric, on platforms underground, because I know that subway station she's at. It's a West 4th Street stop. And it's very evocative, thinking of Phoebe Snow with her guitar waiting for the subway at 3 o'clock in the morning after you know, performing all night long.
Waiting half my life on platforms underground. The other half I wasted as a desperate clown. My problem now is that you're not around. Hey, 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 yeah. Dark, delicious dreams of you all drown. And I don't want, I don't want the night to end. And I don't want the night to end. Oh, baby, baby. Oh. Wrapped around your soul is where I wanna be.
And she was, you know, she was going for it. She was going for it. She talks about having a night with Bruce, where one of the biggest talent agents was seeing Bruce Springsteen, and the manager of the club said she was going to be able to be on that night. And he ended up, like, you know, she alludes giving it to another girl that he possibly was seeing, and she got kicked off. And she was just devastated. I mean, she really worked really hard, but she got hers.
Yeah, and Bruce Springsteen was really encouraging to her.
Yeah.
And he was.
Everyone was. Everyone really.
Yeah.
Everyone has great things to say about Phoebe Snow.
Yeah.
Can I read this?
Bette was very encouraging to her. Bob Dylan was very encouraging to her. All of those people.
Also, like, strange, weird tea in our research. Phoebe Snow also says that she has a sixth sense for famous people.
Uh-huh.
And she said when she met Bette Midler, that she knew right away that that girl was going to be one of our greats. But I'm also like, well, yeah. There's so much history that we're not going to get in here in our intimate portrait of Phoebe Snow. But it's, yeah, I think when we're doing this, because maybe this will inspire you to kind of find her and delve into it. Or maybe this will inspire you to kind of search for other people. Can I read you this really amazing Rolling Stone quote?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it was a natural wonder of a voice, soaring as high as many Rippertons, and descending to a butch quasi-bass, capable of apparently infinite textual variation, from the gauziest of whispers to the bulkiest of bellows. An obvious, once-in-a-generation voice from the first note, and an astonishingly artless sounding voice as well.
Wow.
She was on the cover of Rolling Stone,
right?
So she kind of, so like
that
she,
was a, and the other thing about her voice that quote brings up in terms of, like, I've also read a lot of things about, while many people thought she was black, the amazing thing about her was that her voice was so real and authentic to her. It was like an extension of her speaking voice, and she wasn't imitating a style or a sound. She was very unique and kind of singular in her sound and style.
Listening to her albums, it's that kind of. There's that really fun time period where music was in a kind of full transition. Rock, the new sound of rock was just being created, but everyone kind of knew the classics and jazz. And so a lot of these artists were kind of incorporating it all. And Phoebe was just really excellent about kind of being able to traverse all of it. I feel like her albums kind of move around a lot, in kind of genre shift, and it's all so beautiful, and it all really works. They're really seamless.
And there was a huge singer songwriter movement at the time, and she, of these singer songwriters, which she was one of them, she had, her voice was just so much, so it was far and above so many of them. And so this guy named Denny Cordell at Shelter Records saw her at the bitter end and asked her to record for them in 1972. And so she made her first album, which is called Phoebe Snow, and the number one single was Poetry Man.
Sweet, please give it to me, yeah, to me, oh, oh, are a genie, and all I ask for is your smile each time I rub the lamp. La 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 la. When I am with you, I have a giggling teenage crush, and now I'm a sultry man. Yeah, a sultry man. Whoa, talk to me some more. You don't have to go, 'cause you're the poetry man. You make things up.
And that's, like you said, that's her. That would be her biggest.
That's her biggest hit.
Right?
Yeah. It reached number 5 on the charts, Poetry Man, and she was nominated for a Grammy for Best New Artist in 1974. And then she started opening for the great Jackson Browne. And I love this. In this Rolling Stone article that Jason mentioned before in 1974, it's so much of it is about how she realized she was hypoglycemic. All she could talk about is how sugar is the devil and how she can't be near it because it makes her really depressed to eat sugar. And so she was just like on the road trying to figure out like how to eat well and not go nuts. Anyway, I found that to be really fun because I imagine that's really fucking hard when you're touring with like a rock band. But then she started dating a guy named Phil Kearns, who she would kind of marry for a brief time when she was on that tour.
And in the 1975, that was a tumultuous year for Phoebe. She actually was in a battle with her record company called Shelter over payments for her recording sessions for the first album. Mm-hmm. What was that first album called?
Phoebe Snow.
Right. I fucking always will never not love when they're like, make it my name. My name will be the first. Beth didn't do that. Beth did it on her second album.
Second album.
So she was trying to get payments for the recording sessions, as well as royalty payments on the record that was certified gold. And then she has her daughter.
Victoria Rose mm-hmm. is her daughter. And she's married to Phil Kearns at this time. But when Victoria Rose was born, her airway was restricted for a little bit during birth. So she was born really brain damaged.
Needs kind of 24-hour assistance. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, her husband was gay and he kind of walked out on the family.
Yeah.
So she, not only did she have a newborn daughter, which is just so hard in general, mm-hmm. But the daughter is, you know,
blind and couldn't speak, and she's a single mom now.
And now she's a single mom. So imagine,
She refused to institutionalize her.
Right.
Which a lot of people did at that time in the 70s. If you had a very disabled kid, they would institutionalize that kid or like put her in some place with 24-hour care.
And because back in the day, we had mental institutions. We had actual institutions mm-hmm. that people would send their family members to.
And she just refused to do that. She was like, no fucking way, this is my daughter.
Well, they were not the best of places.
No, so. Not all of them. Some of them were. I mean, yeah.
And then the government shut them all down. But anyways, Phoebe stayed with her daughter.
Yeah. And so she, and then she finally got away from Shelter Records after all that shit you were talking about. And she signed with Columbia, and then she made another record called Second Childhood. And it's a little jazzier, and it's a soft album. It's kind of like, it's a mellow and sad. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Second Childhood, yeah.
My baby's out there in his spacecraft, searching for some energy. Thank you.
after that, she did an album called It Looks Like Snow, which is much more of a bang. And then she had two more with Columbia, one called Never Letting Go and another one called Against the Grain. And it's all, like, it's advancing as the 70s advance. And she's, like you were saying, with how music is evolving, it is getting more rocky and getting more banger. But she's still, it's almost like, she reminds me of Laura Nero sometimes.
Yeah, that's a really good similar vibe.
Yeah, it's singular in itself. But if you appreciate soul, if you appreciate R&B, if you appreciate folk or rock, she's kind of, Phoebe Snow will be there for all of those fan bases. But at the end of the 70s, she ended up leaving Columbia because they were really pushing her hard to tour and tour and tour.
And she couldn't.
No, because of Victoria Rose. She couldn't tour all the time, and she had to be a full-time mom, and she just wasn't going to let being a star be in the way with that.
This is a cool thing. This is my other connection to Phoebe Snow in my obsessive Bette Midler research. Okay, yes. Kids, are you ready for this hot tea? That album, interestingly enough, that Bette Midler covered the Phoebe Snow song, Songs from Your Depression, she had actually cut a track with Paul Simon. And I think they were going to each put their track on each other's upcoming album. So it was originally supposed to be on Bette's record.
Right. Because Bette duetted with lots of iconic men on that album, like Bob Dylan and Tom Waits.
Yeah, so I think she was having kind of a hush-hush torrid affair with Paul Simon. So she cuts this track, which is called Gone at Last. I think a lot of you people, you know,
probably know that song.
That it's a kind of a really a fun gospel bop. And cut it, recorded it, mixed it, and then Paul scrapped it. We're assuming that maybe they ended kind of bad, but he contacted Phoebe Snow to cut it again, and Phoebe Snow was like, "Why do you want me to?" You know, Phoebe, she was kind of taken aback,
yeah,
because she was like, "I love Bette Midler. Like, I think she said she heard the version. She thought it was really good, but like, you know, she couldn't say no to that. And that kind of was that's kind of like probably would be her other second
most famous recording.
Most famous recording. There's actually such a good video of her of them singing that in the 90s. And Joshy Wales. I can't, it was on a late night show, like I think Letterman or something.
Yeah, her and Paul Simon came back together to do Gone at Last together, and she's fucking incredible in it.
Paul Simon finally, a couple of years ago, released the Bette Midler version of that song. So
yeah,
so you can get that on like one of his reissues.
And then also in the late 70s, she was the musical guest on the second ever episode of SNL, which was really cool. Because the late 70s were tough for her because Phil Kearns left her in like 78. And so she stopped touring, and she was, you know, in this place in her life. And then she got to be on SNL, and there was this huge show just starting. And she does this duet with other diva you all know, Linda Ronstadt.
Diva's diva. Linda Ronstadt is a diva's diva. Oh, also, good, bring it back to Bette. What did she sing with Bette on? Actually, it was one of Linda Ronstadt's last tracks that she uses. Linda Ronstadt, unfortunately, has Parkinson's disease.
Yes.
But yeah, she sings Sisters with Bette on her...
On the Rosemary Clooney album.
And she sung with Dolly Parton and Linda Ronstadt on Trio. And I don't know. Linda Ronstadt is so fucking rad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a real help for... I think it was a real lovely gesture to have Phoebe Snow sing with her.
Can I tell if he loves me so? Is it in his eyes? Oh, no!
sounds so good on that track.
Yeah, it's really fun.
They do this little cha-cha dance, mm-hmm. and they're so cute, and they're obviously having a fucking ball.
And that's when she's in her iconic big, big, like, huge, kind of tinted glasses.
Huge, like, transitions glasses. Yeah. Very late 70s. She looks amazing.
It's fun.
So then her next album is called Rockaway. She moved to a new record label, and this is my favorite album of hers. It's a total banger. This is her kind of real rock album. She does it with Billy Joel's band. All
alone, nothing but the sound of crickets on a summer's night. On our own, no one else around. I tell you that we'll
Snow's career, and they said she is one of the most gifted voices of her generation. Phoebe Snow can do just about anything stylistically as well as technically. The question that's still unanswered is how best to channel such a talent. And it's true, like, the music industry fully did not know what to do with her. Like, she knew what to do with herself, but all these albums were saying they were not, she was not charting in the same way that she was with the first record.
Right.
She wasn't, you know, it's so funny what we call successful, right? Because there's so
I think
often
we call something successful a lot of times has to do with money. Mm-hmm. Did they make a lot of money?
Right. And if someone isn't Barbra Streisand or Mariah Carey level sales, they say, oh, this is not a successful album. If you listen to Rockaway, that's a very successful album for me in the sense that I love every fucking track and never skip one and also have it on vinyl.
Okay, now we're in the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we wrote. It was rough.
Things get dark in the 80s.
Yeah, she said she got sick. She mm-hmm. said she was sick. We're not really kind of sure of what. Also, mind you, this whole time, she's still taking care of Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's still her...
By herself,
that's still pretty much... That's kind of... She's able to put out these albums, but her main priority and kind of, you know, the majority of her time was spent taking care of her daughter. But my darling children, she did some jingles. I love a jingle. I would love, you know, they always, like, I don't know, it was like the Cradle of Rock or stuff where, like, they showed jingle writer. I just love when they like, back in the 50s, that was someone's job, was to sit at the piano and
just,
like,
write a jingle.
Write a fucking jingle.
It was a day job for songwriters, and Phoebe Snow was like, fuck, they're not asking me to make another record. I'm going to write a jingle because I need some money to take care of my special needs child.
And so she did jingles for AT&T, and she did the theme song for A Different World. What is she the voice of? The touch, the feel of cotton, the fabric of our lives. That's Phoebe Snow, kids.
The touch, the feel of cotton, the fabric of our lives.
She fucking wrote that, like, iconic thing. And that, I'm sure she made really good money from that. I hope so.
We hope so.
Gosh, that was, that commercial. But also thinking of, like, that commercial would come on during A Different World. A Different World, if you don't know, was a spinoff of The Cosby Show starring Jasmine Guy. And it was one of my favorite shows ever on television.
Yeah, you were really into that show.
I was.
And then in 89, she did an album called Something Real. But with all that and with all the things that we were hoping, because she wasn't really able to put out records and really to tour, she mm-hmm. kind of says, like, touring was probably where, like, my money was going to be able to come from. But I couldn't do that. And I also couldn't really, you know, be crunking out these albums. Because, you know, obviously, this isn't anything new. When artists make an album, they tour on it.
Yeah.
That's promoting it. That's also making a lot of money.
Going out to LA, being on, you know, The Tonight Show or doing all that stuff, which is just stuff she couldn't really do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you like this quote?
Yes. And okay. And so this, okay, this is a quote. Let's keep that in here. So this is a quote from Phoebe around that time and kind of talking about that struggle that she was in. Because my first record was such a hit, I was terribly spoiled and I thought I couldn't do anything wrong. I was also desperate to make tons of money because of my responsibility to my daughter. And there was no longer any joy in making music.
Mm-hmm. It's a huge thing. I mean, it's hard for me as an actor to like, I've struggled to make money over the years, and when you get to that point where you're like, all I need to do is make money, the love of it is really hard to hold on to.
Right. When you're
so mercenary.
When you're scared. When I moved to LA, I didn't have a job, and I just saw my funds dwindling. And I remember spending so many days being like, well, if I just stay in this bed, I at least can't lose money. And I would just be there terrified. It is terrifying.
That was your technique when you moved to New York, too.
Yes, it was. That's my life. That's my life goal.
If you need to save money, just stay in bed.
Stay in bed. And it's comfortable. If it's comfortable. But it really is terrifying. And anyone that's been there knows it when they don't know. I always say there's the difference between the people who have to worry about rent and the people who don't.
Yep.
There's just... And I no judgment there, but there's just a real thing. If you literally aren't sure where that next rent payment is, that's a type of person. That's a large type of people, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's a thing. And so then
she kept struggling.
That was real for Phoebe.
Yeah, she kept struggling into the 90s, and she would give concert performances, and she would perform for her, for her biggest straight fan, Howard Stern. Howard Stern is like
a this
huge
is
Phoebe
fucking
Snow stan.
So weird. When we were getting into our research, I was just pulling up endless things of Phoebe Snow being on his show.
Mm-hmm. She was on Howard Stern's show a lot, and he was just a huge fan, but she wasn't...
She sang at his wedding.
Mm-hmm, she sang at his wedding.
And he said, like, they would want to do something fun, and they would write something, and Phoebe Snow would just come on. And even if it was so gross, she would sing it, and he really championed her.
Yeah. She was a sport, too.
Makes me like him a little bit more because of that.
Yeah, I kind of like Howard Stern sometimes, you know? He was on The View the other day, and it was...
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then she joined a girls band called Zap Mama, and they did a new version of Poetry Man, Make That Money.
I got a thing to do for you, Zap Mama.
You make me laugh, 'cause your eyes light the night and look right through me. La 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 la, you bashful boy, your something sweet, please give it to me, yeah, to me. Go and talk to me some more. You don't have to go. You are the poetry man. You make things all right.
But then she did something truly iconic.
This is Nikki Loves Us,
which we mentioned in Songs of Pride episode. Go back and download that, and then you can rate and review and tweet about it for us at For the Girls Pod. So she started joined a gospel group called the Sisters of Glory with legend and friend of the podcast Thelma Houston. And they performed together at an AIDS benefit, and they ended up recording an album together called Good News and Hard Times, which you can't find fucking anywhere. And if anyone has a copy of it, please burn it.
You can't find the album in a whole, but if you search, if you like put in the right search keywords on YouTube, you can get a good amount of the songs that this group sang. Each one of the girls would take a lead, kind of.
And then they'd sing backup for each other. Cece Pettison was also in the group. They performed at Woodstock in 94. They performed at the Vatican. And it's just amazing to me. It was all kind of centered around
Sunday. AIDS. They performed on Woodstock. That was their Sunday service.
Yeah.
Were these women. And there's video of that too. And it's super iconic.
Yeah.
and it's all around the AIDS crisis, you know. And we talked about in Songs of Pride how Thelma was such a fierce advocate during the AIDS crisis, and I love knowing that Phoebe joined her in that and made this amazing group. And so the 90s continued to be kind of rough, and here and there, she took 14 years to make her next album, which is called Natural Wonder, which is her last studio album. And she sounds incredible, and it's the same great songwriting, and her voice is a little lower and coarser. There's a song called Above the Band, which is really beautiful and you should check out. And it's kind of about what it's like to be an artist and live past your 15 minutes of fame. And it's very personal, I would imagine, for Phoebe. And such an amazing summation of what it means to be an artist after fame is gone.
Stay clear, stay focused, create a little. Stay sober, steady, and a little bit sane. Stay alive, survive past your 15 minutes. And someone will remember your name. Be a force for some good, be a flame eternal. Be brave. Have a thick skin, even when all they see is external. Let your soul shine from within. Create an illusion, a small sleight of hand. Amid the confusion, rise up. Take command, and they'll hear you above.
Experience and she's singing through, and it's a really witchy album. It's fun to, like, you know, go camping with some girlfriends and bring a cassette tape of Natural Wonder by Phoebe Snow. You'll have a good time.
Oh no, I have the hard part. No, I have the hard part. So 2007, we brought the loss of Victoria Rose. Mm-hmm. That was 30. She was 30. Yeah. So Phoebe Snow for 30 years tended to her daughter, and you know the way that. She has said that she doesn't regret anything. Mm-hmm. She absolutely loved and adored her daughter. You know, she spent almost every single day of her daughter with her, of her daughter's life, you know. Mm-hmm. So imagine how close you can get and how special that bond is. And it just wrecked Phoebe Snow. She was absolutely devastated and kind of was a complete mess. And then Nick and I just fully gag on this next hot tea, my kitty doos. So she talks about kind of, you know, as we are when we have like such a great loss like that, she was in a super bad way. And everything was like really, really kind of gray and devastating. But she was flipping through the channels one day, and she came upon a little show called what? Noah's Ark.
Noah's Ark, honeys. It was a drama on Logo TV in the 2000s about a group of friends who are gay black queens who. It's like a little soap opera show.
Yeah, it kind of had like kind of had like a queer as folk kind of vibe to it, but even more. Otzi, if that makes sense. Yes. I think it was like a half an hour show. It was on Logo, so like it wasn't like really graphic, but there was like a lot of sex scenes. It was silly. I watched some of it.
Yeah, I watched it.
But this is what got Phoebe Snow out of her darkness, was watching Noah's fucking Ark.
Mm-hmm. She became a super, super fucking stan of the show, and she would just watch it over and over and over again.
So she contacted the creator,
the show got canceled.
Yep.
Without finishing the story. Like it was one of those things where they like, it was like season three or season four, and they just all of a sudden it just stopped.
They didn't wrap it up.
And Phoebe is like, what the fuck, you guys?
And she just wanted to like let the creator know how important the show was to her, you know? And this is what Nick really wants to talk about, is that they met at an iconic, now closed gay bar called Splash. And in quotations, Nick wrote, Nick has so many stories about Splash. It is where I learned to be gay.
It was this big club in the aughts.
Three floors, which you don't really see anymore. Mm-hmm.
And I used to bartend at a different, and a cocktail waitress at a different club that was owned by the same people. So sometimes I would be sent over to do a little subbing. Mm-hmm. And my ex-boyfriend used to bartend and go-go dance there. And I just really, like, going to Splash of a night was what I did in my late teens and early 20s.
So she met with him, and she just wanted to give her gratitude to the show. And he knew of her, and he really loved her work. And so what happens is, a couple of years later, or I don't know how many years later, they decide to make a Noah's Ark movie.
Mm-hmm, to finish up the story.
Uh-huh. And they invite her to be on the show, and they use some of her songs on it. And she says, when she makes me want to cry. When she met the cast of fucking Noah's Ark, she just broke down weeping, mm-hmm. because of how much they meant to her, and how much she was able to kind of properly grieve for her daughter through this show, and that this show really got her through. And I. Honeys, I just find that lovely.
She says she said I was like a weeping bag of crap.
Right, right.
She said they put all these like false eyelashes on her for the shoot, and they had to take them off because she was just crying too much. She couldn't keep false eyelashes on.
Yeah, she played a jazz singer mm-hmm. in the movie.
And then shortly after the Noah's Ark, I think Noah's Ark was in 2008. In 2010, we lost Phoebe Snow. She had a stroke, and she died from complications, and she got to die in her home in New Jersey. And we lost her way too soon. It was really sudden. And she was just really the every woman of rock and roll. You know, she was the every woman. She was a single mom to a special needs kid who was also trying to be the highest level performing professional artist. And it was a high wire act her whole life.
People really love and appreciate her, but yeah, she really is, and so I don't know if the word unsung is right, because I do think in the industry, and like we said, she had some, you know, random champions like Howard Stern, but her albums are so absolutely terrific, mm-hmm. and chock full of just talent,
yeah.
and ideas.
Beautiful lyrics. She was a poet, and she...
And when Victoria died, she did tour. Yeah. Where she would go to clubs, and she actually did the anniversary at the Bitter End.
Mm-hmm. And where she sings right. Over the Rainbow. And I'm not a huge fan of other people singing Over the Rainbow, but when I heard her sing it, I fully broke down.
Mm-hmm.
Just bawling.
Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far. Where troubles melt like lemon drops, away above the chimney tops, that's where
she is someone who was looking yeah. to get out, was looking to get out of her. You had so many challenges, and she was really looking to that dreamland.
You know what's interesting, and I think what's so interesting is because we have been doing our intimate portrait work on Phoebe Snow. And I think it's really such a treat to invest some time into things that you really like, because mm-hmm. it deepens the understanding of that artist's work. Yeah. I mean, that is not a hot take, but like definitely for us, I think like we've talked about how we really admired Phoebe Snow, but kind of from a distance, kind of how you do most things. Like, mm-hmm. but the more we got in, like the more like things really started hitting and connecting with us. And it's really beautiful. And I feel like on the, I'm going to engage with her on this much deeper way. And I'm really grateful for that.
And in this kind of time when we, when everything is so short, you know, in tweets and posts and clips and videos, and it is, you know, we get to do it because we have a long form podcast about it. And so we have to do it, but we really get to do it. It's this opportunity to learn and deepen our knowledge. And it means a lot to us. So we love, I just wanted to say, I love making this, and it makes me so happy to,
and in a way it slows us down in mm-hmm. a way to, and forces us to really engage with the things that we're talking about. And mm-hmm. but yeah, so it's super, super beautiful. And like I said, we just had so much fun.
And it's so much fun with these Diva You Should Knows. They mean so much to me because it's like, I do feel like we as a country or we as an entertainment industry let Phoebe Snow down.
Yeah.
There are people we let down, and we shouldn't let them go unsung or unrecognized or unremembered in a kind of culture that values the newest shiny thing, the youngest thing, the sexiest thing, mm-hmm. the most relevant thing. We should spend some time thinking about the ones who came before and really spending some time with them and loving on them and celebrating those girls.
Well, okay, Battle Angels, write us in. Tell us if you got inspired and started going down your Phoebe Snow journey, or maybe you have your own Phoebe Snows
that
you
want us to talk about. Who are the divas we should know that we don't know? Because we want to do this more.
Yeah. So write in and tell us that. And
always feel free to share the podcast. Feel free to download, rate, and review the podcast.
Give us money for the podcast.
Absolutely. Give us
a Casper mattress.
Give us Casper mattresses. Give us sponsorships. Give us free furniture.
Yep.
Give us drink tickets.
Yep.
At Splash. But most importantly, give yourself a little time to lift up Phoebe Snow and enjoy her music.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Have fun. Dive deep.
Bye.
Bye. We love you. Bye.
Got a little